Thank you for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, welcome to the third part of our Rest is History special on the statues of central London. And Dominic, we've really been kind of working our way towards where we are standing now, haven't we? Right from the very beginning, because we're now in Parliament Square and we're in front of the statue that triggered the whole statue debate, which is the image of Winston Churchill.
Yeah, this great hulking image.
Which essentially has become a kind of lightning rod in the culture wars.
So we've come on the one day when it's not covered with scaffolding or daubed with "is a racist" or Chelsea FC,
yes,
or any of the other things, yeah, that it's had to endure in the last... So we're on the edge of Parliament Square. He's facing Big Ben. He's this incredibly imposing sort of heroic figure. So supposedly, Tom, Churchill ringed 20 years before he died. He ringed this area of Parliament Square
for himself
on a map and said, "That is where my statue will go." And the sculptor did it and apparently had to redo it because it looked too much like Mussolini. Because he does look, his head, they had to make Churchill's head smaller because otherwise he would look like Mussolini. But anyway, here he is, the great old man of 20th century British politics and the sort of, you know, for so long seen as the incarnation of the Dunkirk spirit, the British bulldog, all the cliches that we grew up with, I suppose, didn't we? And he is the reason, to some extent, he's the reason we're having this, we're doing these podcasts at all. Because his statue has become so controversial. What do you think about it?
Well, I think in a way, it's... The debate around the statue has become divorced from any historical debate about Churchill himself.
Yeah.
I think essentially people come here and put Mohicans on it or daub it or whatever simply because it's a fun way to annoy people who will be annoyed by people doing
it. Well, it's sort of edible, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of...
I don't think it's even that. I don't think people even care about Churchill particularly.
Don't you think so?
I think it's just... I think if you're on a demo and you want to annoy the people that you're on a demo protesting against, you know that defacing Churchill will get a rise out of them.
I think it's more political.
It's a way,
than that,
it's a way of pissing Churchill off the gamins. And on the topic of gamins, I should just mention that the single funniest fact in our first episode, we looked at the statue of General Napier, and I forgot to mention that the statue of Sir Charles James Napier was actually sculpted by somebody called George Gammon Adams. So,
see, if I was a more cynical man, I would think that you've spent the first few moments of this podcast just waiting for an opportunity to bring out your Napier Gammon joke that you forgot to mention two podcasts ago.
Churchill, you might think that, but
it's interesting that he's just got the one name, hasn't he? I mean, well, he's got the one name, what a stupid thing to say. He's just got the one word on his plinth. So there's no Winston, there's no dates, there's just
no explaining
Churchill.
Who he was.
No, but I suppose the assumption was you wouldn't need it. I mean, Churchill was just a titanic figure. And actually, I will say this, he's one of the... You do see people looking at it as they walk past. So there are people right now looking at it, and they're actually about to take a photo, which is not true of most of the statues we covered in the previous podcast. So it's still a statue that clearly, well, it matters. I know that's a weird thing to say of the statue of a man who died in 1965, but it does matter to people, for good or ill.
So I think on the issue of statues, a huge issue is why has the statue been put up? And as we have kind of clearly realised over the course of the previous two podcasts, every figure has a kind of ambivalent record.
Yeah.
You can always find a dark side. You can always find complications.
We haven't had any saints yet, have we?
We haven't had any saints. And so it matters why he's put up. Is this statue commemorating Churchill's racism? Is it commemorating his attitudes to India? Is it commemorating his record in the general strike? I don't think it's in this pole position for any of those reasons. Obviously. This statue is here because he is the man who ensured that Britain stayed independent in 1940 against the worst tyranny that the world has ever faced.
So this is great. Keep it coming.
And for that reason, if there have to be statues, I'm happy for there to be a statue here of Churchill.
If anybody, I just want to say this. If anyone's listening to this from the Daily Mail, Tom Holland is not available to write.
There's a but, which is that in general, I find this kind of cluster. Oh, I'm about to be arrested.
What a shame that you're being silenced.
Yeah, I'm about to be arrested. I don't like this kind of galaxy of political luminaries.
Oh, I love this. I love a pantheon.
No, I don't. Because to be honest, I'm happy for Churchill to be here.
See, I would come here with my son and walk around and say, he's him, this is so-and-so. I think this is a great educative square, this, a space.
So this is Parliament Square.
Yeah.
So in a sense, this is the a kind of figurative representation of our democracy.
Yeah.
So it matters hugely who is here.
Well, that's why you have Churchill, because he defended British democracy in 1940 when it was in battle.
I'm happy for Churchill to be here if we have to have statues.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is a case for saying in Parliament Square that we, rather as with the cenotaph, which symbolises the war dead, without reference to generals, without reference to even to kind of representative figures of the soldiers who fought in the war, and I think therefore is all the more moving for it. I think that there would be a way of summoning up the traditions of British democracy here that didn't rely
on a massive stone ballot box. Is that what you want?
Well, I'm not a sculptor, so I
think nations need heroes, and I think elected democratic representatives are as good as any.
But politicians, by their definition, kind of aren't heroes and are, by definition, divisive figure. So if Churchill, who saved the country, who did as much as anyone to defeat fascism, is a controversial figure, then so is everyone else. So we're now standing in front of a man who I know you have
let's
said...
Let's get on to him in a second, but let's one point about Churchill. Churchill was divisive. When he died in 1965, his former sworn political adversaries, so people like Clement Attlee, said he was a great man. Attlee said, you know, the greatest Englishman of our time. Nobody opposed his statue. Nobody opposed his state funeral. So I think
They do now. And that's the point.
Yeah, but for dopey reasons.
That's the point, is that he's now become a divisive figure.
Okay, right. I don't want to get cross, so I don't start crying, which would be which would be worse. So,
but we're now
in front
of David Lloyd George, who I know you essentially wanted to cancel.
Yeah,
I mean, so it's a terrible statue.
It
looks like a melting ice lolly.
It's from 2007.
He's got his cloak like he's doing an enormous great
breaking
wind. It's a tremendous effect.
He's got this sort of billowing cloak behind him. He's wearing a bow tie, isn't he? So Lloyd George, I suppose, the argument for him is, you know, reforming liberal chancellor, one of the founding fathers of the welfare state, ultimately the man who won the war, so-called, in World War One. The argument against him is unbelievably corrupt, even by 21st century standards. You know, flogged peerages for money, stabbed all his colleagues in their back.
And didn't he get off with his daughter-in-law?
A hideous womanizer, cuckolded his own son, which I think is pretty bad form. At any moment in history, I don't think there's ever been a time when that's been regarded as, and just couldn't be trusted around women. I mean, in a Me Too age, to me, Lloyd George is a bit vulnerable, actually. Now, this will raise hackles among our Welsh listeners, because he's the only Welshman, I think, we've had in these three podcasts, and they would want him, but... and of course, liberals, he's a great liberal hero.
Well, the thing is, I think the argument is either you have everybody, which is effectively what we've got.
Yeah.
So, in which case, don't cancel any of them.
I wouldn't really cancel him.
Or get rid of the lot.
Now, well, all that said, Tom, I said I wouldn't really cancel him. And now we're on to a very, very, very interesting candidate. So this is somebody, we're now in front of Jan Christian Smuts, 1870 to 1950. So this is a fascinating one that most visitors to this square will not recognise the name, and they won't know why he's here. He's a Boer War general who fought against the British, then is kind of reconciled to Britain. He fights in World War One, and he is the South African Prime Minister during World War Two. And I'm sure people who listen to our sister podcast, We Have Ways, about the Second World War, will know that there were contingency plans that if Churchill died in World War II, Smuts would become Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. So in his day, a colossal figure, now kind of forgotten in Britain at least. But of course, because he was a white South African, there is baggage. I mean, he wasn't fully pro-apartheid. He wasn't part of the apartheid regime, but he was pro-segregation. And he had views about race that would be unpalatable to us now. So actually, if you're going to do the keep and cancel game, he is very vulnerable. Do you not think?
Well, so he is one of a number of statues here that aren't British.
Yes.
I think there's an issue with that because I actually think it's a kind of imperial hangover.
Of course it is in his case, yeah.
But I think we're going to come to the statue of Gandhi and of Mandela as well.
Yeah.
I think in a sense, you may say, we're paying respect to the traditions that they represent. But in a way, we're also kind of appropriating them. And it's like we're treating them as though they're still, subjects of the British Empire.
But he was part of a global British Empire.
Yes, I know.
Empire.
But so essentially, this is a very, very imperial space.
Yeah.
Precisely, not just because we've got Smuts here, but because we've got Mandela and Gandhi as well.
Agreed. And I think
I think we are appropriating, the great figures of India and of South Africa.
Well, they were part, Smuts was part of Britain's story.
So Smuts, I agree. So Mandela and Gandhi are slightly different. But the Smuts, also it's a very odd statue because he looks like he's ice skating.
He does.
He's got his hands behind his back.
Yeah,
and
he's kind of gliding across the ice. Striding forth. Now, one of my favourite historical characters, we've talked about him on the podcast.
The World Cup of Prime Ministers.
He's Viscount Palmerston.
Yes.
Supposedly, though apocryphally, I think, died while deflowering a maid on a billiard table at the age of 80.
Yes.
What your brother would call...
Gunboat diplomacy.
What your brother would call him, a massive lad, I think it's fair to say. Gunboat diplomacy, smiting foreigners. He was an abolitionist, actually. So slavery is the yardstick.
He's
got bonus points, but then he's got debits because he wanted to support the Confederacy because he hated America. So he thought this is our way to smash America, so we should have supported the Confederacy.
He's the model of a Victorian...
Imperialist. Yeah, he is. He's an unashamed. If he were here now, he would absolutely be on.
But again, to apply the standard that we have actually rather inconsistently been applying.
You
could say that statues are, a gallery of history. It's a kind of Madame Tussauds.
Well, that's what Parliament Square is. We're surrounded by a line.
Argument is veering all over the place here,
I would keep. I like Palmerston. I like the fact he's there. I think it's a bit of Victorian history.
It's a dashing statue.
It's a very good statue, isn't it?
He
looks like a classic Victorian statesman.
He does.
As does the next person, who is the Earl of Derby.
Oh, everyone loves the Earl of Derby.
Derby.
Nobody wants to cancel the Earl of Derby.
I'm going to fight through these crowds here.
Crowds of pilgrims are genuflecting.
A lot of foreign tourists, I think, come specifically to look at the... And there's a lovely relief at the bottom of the House of Commons, 1833.
And there's the Earl of Derby doing his stuff at the dispatch box.
So he was a Tory leader for 22 years. He was Prime Minister three times, but I think sort of for a period of about a week on each occasion. I'm exaggerating.
Here he is as the Chancellor of the University of Oxford.
See, what a man.
On the other side, he's the Central Executive Cotton Famine
Relief Committee.
Manchester.
He's kind.
Cabinet Council, 1867. So, again, a massive lad.
So, Disraeli put this up, 1874. You know what Disraeli said?
No.
We have raised this statue to him not only as a memorial, but as an example, not merely to commemorate, but to inspire.
So that's why there are crowds of foreign tourists.
Yeah, they've come to be inspired.
Genuflecting before him.
Now, I think our producer, Tony, has been haranguing me throughout these three episodes about relevance. And I think the Earl of Derby is a hard one for me to justify because whatever his achievements, whatever his political importance in the 19th century, if relevance is your yardstick, which I absolutely don't think it should be, but if it is... The Earl of Derby is relevant to nobody. He does have magnificent
whiskers. What about to Derby?
To the city of Derby?
Yeah.
I don't know that he had any great affection for Derby as a place.
But he's not batting for Derbyshire.
Rams till I die. kind of. No, when he thinks of Brian Clough. <it's>,
yeah.
Sorry, that's a reference to be lost on some of our non-football fancying listeners. Anyway, yeah.
He's got great whiskers.
So yeah, he does have great whiskers.
So one for the mutton chop.
He's one for the barbers. Well, not for the barbers, obviously.
No.
Okay, now we've got to a more progressive one, Tom.
Yeah.
So we've done all men except for your Boudica. Although she was last time, wasn't she? I've actually lost track. This walk has been going on for so long. Very recent statue. Do you want to tell us about it?
So this is Millicent Fawcett, the great suffragette leader, which went up 2018, was it? 2019? After a lengthy campaign.
2018, you're right. I was just looking at my notes.
2018.
Caroline Criado Perez.
Yeah. And I think it's great. All in favour of that.
Although, you know what? The Guardian ran columns saying she shouldn't have a statue. They said she wasn't a radical suffragette. They do have pictures all around the side.
Well, that's why I like it. Is because one of, you know, kind of saying that one of the problems with the argument that individuals can sum up entire movements is that, you know, it does very much focus attention on the individual.
Yeah.
But here they've got photographs of people, mostly women, but not exclusively, who contributed to the suffragette.
So I think they're all women, actually.
No, I think so.
Who's a man there?
There's a chap, George Lansbury.
Okay, so there is a man.
Leader of the Labour Party.
Yeah, we've got a couple of men.
We've got the Pankhursts. So they're the more radical.
I thought Tom was just being disobliging about the women on the memorial, but no. And it has this message. She's actually carrying, you know, this flag, I guess. Courage calls to courage everywhere. Very nice, very moving. I think it actually is a lovely bit of public art.
It is. And the fabric of her dress,
You can almost touch it.
You can touch it. In fact, I'm going to.
But Tom, do you know
there
what?
You go. Yep.
She, again, is everybody's cancellable. She was opposed, very violently opposed to Home Rule for Ireland. She left the Liberal Party over the issue of Home Rule to join the Liberal Unionists. So, you know, visitors from Dublin, she's not going to be first stop on their list. And I suppose that reinforces the point that everybody, that none of them are saints. That if you are in this sort of cancellation game, you can find a reason for any historical character.
And talking of no one being saints, our next one is Benjamin Disraeli.
Benjamin Disraeli, Dizzy.
The Boris Johnson of the Victorian world.
Yeah, I mean, Dizzy is the ultimate imperialist, right? I mean, he's the man who made Queen Victoria Empress of India.
He's a charming shyster, isn't he?
He's a mountebank.
He's a mountebank. He's a charming shyster.
He and Palmerston are kind Boris-esque. Of Boris figures, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but here he's not Dizzy, he's not Disraeli, he's Beaconsfield.
Yeah, the
Earl
of Beaconsfield.
Title he took.
Yeah, because he's all about the pageantry.
And he looks
and
very
pomp.
Serious.
He looks statesmanlike.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Why is Gladstone not here?
That is an excellent question to which I don't know the answer. Maybe Gladstone because of his sort of, you know, he's a great commoner and all that sort of stuff.
But you feel if Disraeli's here, then Gladstone should be here as well.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it makes mockery of the whole thing.
The Tories have got a good run with the Earl of Derby as well, of course.
Yeah.
The punter's favourite.
And also there isn't a Labour. Politician here.
No, no, Attlee.
So again,
no.
I think that's a lack.
So we should put up more statues, which is...
I think we should have a statue of Attlee. I think we should have a statue of Gladstone.
We should have a statue of Jim Callaghan.
Definitely.
Definitely.
I think it's
and
what
on
the
that
people
note,
want.
I tell you what we should have. We should have a break.
Yeah, we should.
So we shall reconvene after the break and we should be looking at more statues. Goodbye.
Statues, we've got them.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp.
Bottling everything up is never a good idea. It can have terrible consequences. For instance, look at all the conflicts throughout history. I wonder how many of them could have been solved if they just talked things out.
And Tom, I have a confession for our listeners. As you know, I've been really struggling with anxiety about the massive series that we've got coming on The Rest is History, all the prep we have to do for that series on the French Revolution, the First World War. I mean, it's all mounting up, isn't it? And when we talked it out, I felt so much better now that I got all those crippling anxieties and insecurities off my chest.
If you want to talk, you can always talk to me. But if not, then I highly recommend therapy. It can help you learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It empowers you, Dominic, to be the best version of yourself.
If you want to give therapy a try, why not check out BetterHelp? It's entirely online, it's convenient and flexible, and it's really easy to get started. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and they'll match you with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest.
with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/restishistory today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/restishistory.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome back to the Statue Fest that is the third episode of our tour of central London. We're in Parliament Square and we are now standing in front of another statue, someone who was a subject of the British Empire.
Yes.
But is an icon of another country, Mahatma Gandhi.
Mahatma Gandhi, yeah, of course. A half-naked fakir, as Churchill called him.
So I was saying earlier that I think that this is an act of cultural appropriation.
But Gandhi is a kind of reckoning with empire, isn't he?
He
is. The fact that his statue is there. So it went up in 2015.
But that's ostensibly what it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of implicitly serving as a reminder of the British Empire.
Having a cake and eating it.
Well, it's a kind of post-imperial morality. So it's objectively saying we're against the empire, but hey, look. You know, we're in the center of what was the imperial capital, and we're still.
I think that's a bit harsh. I think it's. I think he's there as a saint. Actually,
he's India's saint. He's not ours.
Yeah, but you. I think it's a good statement that Britain has a statue of Gandhi. For listeners who don't know, give us a quick précis of Gandhi's life in 15 seconds.
So I suppose Gandhi. I mean, he's an Indian who comes to study law actually in London.
Yep.
So in that sense,
so he's a Londoner,
he could count as a Londoner.
Yep.
So perhaps on that level. He deserves a statue here. He goes to South Africa. He goes back to India. He leads the fight for independence from the British Raj. Gets to see independence and then gets shot by a Hindu nationalist and die. So a kind of heroic figure.
But as with Smuts, he's part of the British story. He's part of that story.
Yes, he is. But I think his existence here, I don't know, it just kind of slightly feels like we are kind of claiming him as our own, and we don't really have the right to do that.
I don't agree with that. I think you're basically saying the square should be full of what kind of progressive people would call baddies.
I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that I think that there is a sense in which appropriating Gandhi, appropriating Mandela, and putting them in the middle of Parliament Square is saying that, you know, these are kind of British figures.
I don't think it's saying that at all. I think it's saying that.
I know objectively that's not. And I know that's not the rationale. But I think that there is a kind of implicit assumption of moral superiority here.
So I often think these things, you know, you bring a load of kids here, primary school children or something, and this is a statue that a lot of them will stop at, even if they don't know the story, because they'll be intrigued by the figure you know, who's in his kind of robes and stuff. And it's so obviously so different from all the others. And it's a great, I mean, it's actually, if nothing else, it's a great educative space. I mean, you can tell the story.
I suppose also what's interesting about it. Really, yeah. And look at, and if you look at the left arm of both statues, they're almost identical.
Yeah.
So Disraeli has the robes of a peer of the realm, and Gandhi has the kind of the rough homespun of...
Well, isn't that a lovely image? I mean, now, just behind... I mean, so much of this is about empire, isn't it? And about race and all these kinds of things. And just over Gandhi's shoulder is, in the distance, is Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln, I suppose, is... He's almost part of the same story to the extent that it's about justice between... sort of black and white. That's why Lincoln is there, because he's,
but I think it's
he's
also,
America's
it's,
greatest
it's,
president.
It's also about kind of English speaking peoples, isn't it?
Partly,
I mean, again,
yeah.
It's kind of claiming it Lincoln for our own. I just think that it's
I utterly disagree with
utterly
that.
Utterly refute this.
So the Lincoln, right? The Lincoln is a gift. The Lincoln is a gift from America.
Like the Washington.
And it was unveiled by Lloyd George. So it's on the other side. It's over the traffic, so I can't be bothered to walk all the way over there. But you can see it from within Parliament Square. It was unveiled by one of the other people in this square, Lloyd George, in 1920, at the end of the First World War. But of course, some of Lincoln's statues have been taken down in America now, because Lincoln famously, although he was an abolitionist and he led the North during the American Civil War, he didn't believe that white and black people could ever be equal. He argued that there would always be differences and that white race should always be superior. So by 21st century, to some people, by 21st century standards, Lincoln is
Cancel
on the wrong side
well.
Of history, which seems an extraordinary thing to me to say about the man who emancipated slaves in the Emancipation Proclamation at the end of the American Civil War. But there you go. You'd keep Lincoln, wouldn't you, Tom? I don't think we've appropriated him. He's a present. He's a gift.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't feel strongly about it either way, but I'm...
Now, again, we have to fight our way past hordes of tourists for this next one.
Well, we've had a lot of police cars going by, haven't we?
Yeah.
And basically, that's this man's fault.
Robert Peel.
Robert Peel, founder of the police.
Yeah. Tamworth's most
pride of Tamworth.
Son. Yeah, the pride of Tamworth.
He spent a statue of Peel in Tamworth, along with Athelflaed, Lady of the Mercians, the founding mother of England, who I...
You would like to see here.
I'd like to see here, yeah.
Yeah, instead you have like. To tolerate Robert Peel.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Robert Peel is a great early 19th century prime minister. Very consequential. Repeals the Corn Laws. The producer's looking sceptical because of his relevance arguments and, you know.
No, he's an important figure, but I mean, he's quite boring.
Tony, the producer, who is the, you know, he's my sort of common man that I that we bring on the podcast to be the voice of the nation. He's not sure. What about Nelson Mandela? I actually think this is a terrible... I mean, this is an awful thing to say. I actually think it's a bad statue.
Why do you think it's a bad statue? Because it doesn't look like him.
I don't think it looks quite right. I think the legs are a bit too short.
I quite like
the Nelson
shirt.
Mandela have very short legs?
Well, you see, being... Now, but you see, family, small girl's gone up and hugged him.
Hugged him, that's nice. Yeah.
So,
but I'm not sure if she's hugging him because she knows he's Nelson Mandela or she's hugging him because it's...
Now there's a boy going up to join. I think there must be
here.
A part of that. Yeah, the grey seeds. They're not doing that to Robert Peel. Mind you,
Robert
he didn't
Peel's
afford them. He's on a massive plinth.
Robert Peel's on like a 6-foot plinth.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a health and safety hazard.
I think surely the youthful Sandbrook would have risked health and safety to hug the legs of Sir Robert Peel. No,
up,
Dominic, come down.
Climb up the Earl of Derby.
Mama, I must hug. I must hug them. I must hug Sir Robert Peel.
Well, anyway, Nelson's here. Now, I suppose, Tom, this is your... You're going to, you know...
Well, I've already said what I've got to say about that. I've already said what I've got to say.
I mean, to be fair, you've said what you've got to say about 62 podcasts ago, but I don't hold that against you.
I have. I mean, I wouldn't... I think it's great that the statues of Nelson Mandela, ANC had a... London was kind of their second home.
Yes, it was.
You know, it's crucially important. There was a statue of the bust of Nelson Mandela on the South Bank. You know, I think that's great. I just think that Parliament Square, the hub of the imperial capital, it just feels slightly...
It kind of makes sense. I think it's a nice closing of the story. It closes the circle.
Maybe.
It has the people like, you know, Disraeli, who were
maybe
absolutely emblematic of empire and create... I mean, who... It was Disraeli who gave Victoria the title Empress of India. And then I think you chronologically, you close the story with Gandhi.
Maybe.
Who fought for Indian independence. Maybe. Mandela, who came to, you know, to embody reconciliation between black and white and a kind of post-colonial future.
No, Dominic.
I think that is a nice story.
Okay, I'm going to accept that you've thought more deeply about this than I have.
This is... I, the producers are here with us now. Please excerpt this clip and put it as a special one-off broadcast.
No, I'm just... I'm convinced.
Tom has been very generous, but I have convinced. To say, Tom has also been very gentlemanly in not mentioning it throughout these three episodes. I've been wearing...
A Tom Holland benefit year cap.
A Tom Holland-themed baseball cap.
Yeah, it's been
utterly
great.
Humiliating, because I forgot to bring... It's a beautiful sunny day, unusually.
Yeah.
I'm worried about getting sunburnt, and so I'm wearing a Tom Holland... I mean, it's even got your face on the front. It's face modelled as a lion's face.
It's backed against Rajasthan, where I bowled the Prince of Udaipur. So that's what this is all commemorating. And it's wonderful that you've been broadcasting this to the people of central London.
I've seen a lot of people doing double takes and shaking their head sadly when they see the cap.
It's a shame that this is only audio, because it would be a wonderful sight for people.
And a lot of people come up to me and say, God, you must love Spider-Man.
Dominic, I can't believe that you pulled that low trick.
After the cap, I mean, come on.
Okay, so we've done Parliament Square. There's two more statues that we do need to look at. One of them is the statue of Cromwell, which we talked about in the episode with Paul Lay. The other is the statue of Richard I. So we'll come to them. But before we do that, standing next to Parliament Square, we've got Westminster Abbey.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot. Actually, our very first podcast, we were talking about ideas of greatness and then of saintliness.
We were.
And we've talked about martyrs. And there are literal martyrs above the Great West Door of Westminster Abbey. So I think we should go and have a look at them, because I think that they're a fascinating counterpoint to the array of kind of secular power that we get in Parliament Square.
Any excuse to do churchmongering.
Let's cross the road and we'll join there.
So Tom, you've dragged me to the front of Westminster Abbey. Very nice. Of course, lovely Abbey. But I want to know why I'm here. What have you got for me?
Okay, so we're looking at the west doorway. And above the west doorway, there were vacant niches for presumably biblical figures or biblical kings or saints or whatever would have gone up. And they were empty. So beginning of the 21st century, they put up statues of people who'd been martyred for the Christian faith over the course of the 20th century. They are of international scope. So we were just talking in Parliament Square about, you know, the international character of commemoration. Here it's absolutely Catholic in the, you know, small c sense, you kind of universal church. So in the middle you have Martin Luther King is one of them. You've got Oscar Romero, who was the Archbishop of
El Salvador.
Who was shot celebrating Mass. You've got guy with the beard on the left is Maximilian Kolbe, who was a Polish priest who sacrificed himself, I think, in Auschwitz. He died in concentration camp. And you've got one of the Grand Duchesses in Russia who was killed, thrown down a coal mine by the communists.
Yes.
You've got people from China. So you've got people from across the world. But the thing is that we've been talking about how most of the statues that we've been looking at are people who have killed. These are people who are here because they were killed.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Bonhoeffer, yes. So I suppose they're a bit like Edith Cavell, who was in our first episode.
She was. So these are martyrs. But Tom, I mean, this, you were arguing before about appropriation. You don't think this is kind of Britain... I mean, you have all these international figures, don't you? If you sort of think you're the centre of the world and you want to...
No, because this is a church and it was built as a Catholic church and it has always celebrated saints from across the world. It claims a universal jurisdiction, which, of course, the British state does not.
And do you distinguish between these statues, which are on the facade of the church, as so many statues have been through history... but they're of real people, you know, Martin Luther King. Do you think there's a difference between them and the Parliament Square secular statues?
Yes, completely.
Even though Martin Luther King, you know, he's the same kind of figure as Nelson Mandela and Gandhi, isn't he? Why is he different just because he's on the facade of a church?
Well, Martin Luther King is being celebrated as a Christian here.
Okay.
Who is being, you know, implication is that he was shot as a martyr for his faith, which I suppose in a sense he was. I mean, I agree that's controversial, but it's from the ideological point of view.
Yeah.
It's an interesting counterpoint to the traditions of heroism that we were talking about in the first episode that we ever did on the rest of
the greatness,
history,
yeah.
Where we talked about greatness.
Well, even in that episode, we sort of trod a line between greatness and sainthood, didn't we?
People are more interested, you know, the idea of heroism really has become one with which we're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Whereas the idea of martyrdom, I think, is one that we're more comfortable with.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think we're more keen to embrace the victim now, maybe, than the conqueror, if you like.
So I think that's you know, it's an interesting counterpoint that those statues are obviously not nearly as well known as the statues in Parliament Square, and often people can go in Westminster Abbey and not look up and see them at all.
Yeah.
But you know, Westminster Abbey is the, you know, it's the religious equivalent of Westminster. It's the religious heart of the country.
But Tom, in the very first episode that we did about statues, which probably for our listeners seems about a lifetime ago, you were talking about the Greeks and the Romans, particularly the Romans, and their influence on statuary. And I'm surprised you didn't talk about medieval saints and people of that kind. Because surely they're also obvious precursors to...
Because I think that's the tradition that the 17th century resurrection of Roman sculpture kind of supersedes.
Okay.
Because celebrating saints with statues is obviously a Catholic thing, which then gets erased with the Reformation. So in a sense, perhaps you could say that starting to put up statues of kings dressed in Roman costume...
Yeah.
Is a way of replacing that hunger for sculptures of human individuals that Protestantism had effectively destroyed when they closed down the monasteries.
See, I think there's a huge issue, which we talked about in our Culture Wars podcast, of people's anxiety about images.
Yeah.
And
which is we've talked about Gary Young's article in the Guardian.
Yeah, which said that all statues should be pulled down. Yeah.
I think that is a kind of enduring anxiety, and I think that a lot of the anxiety around all the political figures here. So people have targeted Churchill, who, you know, basically saved Britain and the world from fascism, but they also targeted Gandhi.
Yes, they did.
You know, the man who won independence for India, but was, you know, accused of racism.
I think there's a human impulse to tear down heroes, to create heroes, but also there's an enduring desire to tear them down. And that's why attacking Churchill and Gandhi, probably of all the, apart from Mandela, of all the people we've talked about, the most loved, the most associated with virtue of various kinds, I think that's why they were targeted.
Well, I think also they were targeted because they were racist. I mean, I think that's an important part of it.
I mean, if you're going to be as reductive as that, surely that is true of all the people on part. I mean, was the Earl of Derby, with Disraeli, did they not have prejudices that would seem alien to us now?
I think
now?
It's a tension between the idea of a hero and the idea of a saint.
Yeah.
And with a saint, you accept that they're fallen, they're human. So the fact that they're sinners is kind of factored in theologically. With heroes, it becomes more complicated because we don't have the...
Right, yeah.
I'm talking of saints and sinners.
And heroes. One of my absolute...
We have now arrived outside the Palace of Westminster.
My favourite figures in all history. The Lord Protector, Oliver Cromwell. I love this statue.
So, Dominic, you're winning us all kinds of listeners in Ireland.
Of course, of course. So every time I walk past this with my son, who's half Irish... I always say, oh, let's pay homage to the great man. And my wife kind of sighs and rolls her eyes. So this was very controversial, Tom, even at the time. It's put up in 1899 by Hanno Thornycroft. A liberal MP at the time, John George Phillimore, said, any man who could object to a statue of Cromwell must be imbued with bigotry and party spirit in the highest degree.
Goodness. Well, that's Ireland told.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, the Irish nationalists,
the Royalists.
who were sitting in, you know, in this building at the time, because they were part of the House of Commons, they all voted against, and the Tories voted against, because, you know, the man who killed a king. But the Liberals got it through.
We So in the first episode, we opened at the statue of Charles I.
Yeah.
And I said then that I liked the fact that
he's looking down
we commemorate the Civil War by having a statue of Charles I at one end of Whitehall and a statue of Cromwell at the other. I would feel uncomfortable having a statue of Cromwell if it wasn't balanced by a statue of Charles I and vice versa.
I don't think the Irish listeners will say, oh, now that I hear there's a statue of Charles I, I feel a lot better.
Well, the war in Ireland was a war over, you know, it was a civil war in which the two proponents were, you know, Cromwell was there to fight royalists.
Yeah.
So actually having those two figures is a way of paying honour to people who fought in very committed ways on both sides.
I think that's a very elaborate way of putting what's basically an accident that they're...
It is an accident. Absolutely is an accident. It wasn't deliberate, but it is a way of solving the kind of inevitable tensions and conflicts that you have. Just like, you know, we took Parliament Square, I think that Churchill should be balanced by Attlee, and I think that Disraeli should be balanced by Gladstone.
He's all about balance.
I think
balance.
That's important. I think it is important. In a public space like this, you need balance.
There are all kinds of ironies, aren't there, with the Cromwell statue. I mean, Cromwell's here as a champion of parliamentary democracy, but he, of course, is the man who kicked out Parliament.
Down. Yeah, closed it down. Well, also, I mean, the other thing that this bears witness to is the fact that Cromwell, in a sense, and we talked about this with Paul Lay, is a 19th century creation.
Yeah, so, well, this Cromwell
The Cromwell who is idolized and the Cromwell who is hated, people who enshrine him as the, you know, the great founder of parliamentary liberty, and the people who condemn him as a kind of genocidal precursor of Hitler, both of them are indulging in creative anachronism.
Yes.
And I suppose in a sense, an awful lot of what we've been talking about is creative anachronism.
Of course it is. And that's true of a lot of the statues.
And talking of creative anachronism.
Yeah.
We've got one last
statue.
Magnificent display.
Our producer wouldn't forgive me if I didn't point out that Cromwell is behind bars, which I think, Tony, you see as some sort of metaphor, do you?
But obviously the reason for that is that Parliament is a terrorist threat. You know, it's under... And the two groups of people who have committed terrorist attacks in Westminster over the past few decades, first, Irish Republicans.
Yes, that's
for
true.
Whom Cromwell the statue of Cromwell is a standing provocation.
Yes, that's true.
The other are Islamist terrorists, for whom our final statue, likewise it might be thought, is a standing provocation. Because our final statue is an equestrian image of Richard Coeur de Lion, Richard I, the 12th century king who led the Third Crusade to recapture Jerusalem.
And there's a nice parallel here, Tom, nice bit of symmetry. We started this trilogy 7 years ago with the statue of Charles I, another equestrian statue, another king of England, Charles I, case king of England, Scotland. And here we are with another mounted king on a horse, a rather more impressive figure, I have to say, than Charles I, who is basically a bit of a fop. Richard I, but a controversial figure, I suppose. I mean, he basically spent most of his reign out of England fighting Saracens, didn't he?
Yeah, and so kind of a standing provocation, I thought, to anyone who wants to see the establishment of a caliphate. it's kind of, you know, bring it on. The other thing about him is that rather like Boudicca, he was no friend of London, because he famously said that he would cheerfully have sold London if it would raise him enough money to pay for his crusade.
He's like me.
Yes.
He has my take on London.
He was never here. I mean, he was endlessly off in the Holy Land or fighting in France.
So this is another statue with an interesting history, an amusing history. So it was designed originally for the Great Exhibition by a man called Baron Marochetti. And do you know what the newspapers called him?
Something offensive.
Count Marrow Fatty.
Did they? Was that in the Daily Mail?
Probably. Daily Mail didn't exist then, but I'm sure they would have called him that. So he did this, and a lot of people said it was awful, because actually, if you look closely, the chain mail that he's wearing is skin tight, so it clings to his muscles in a way that's utterly implausible. The poetry anthologist Francis Turner Palgrave, this is my final quote of this trilogy, said, "It was an essentially vulgar and low-class work, precisely on the grounds, Tom, that call forth the wonder of uncultivated spectators."
Well, I'm an uncultivated spectator because I quite like it. I quite like it. Didn't it get hit by a bomb in the Second World War and they had to repair the sword?
A bomb exploded nearby. I think just missed it.
And the sword got broken and they had to replace it.
Exactly. I think that's the story. Yes. So it's a weird one that's here, isn't it? Because he was a king who was absent for most of the time.
Yeah, so all the kings, the statues of the kings. We've got Richard the First, who wanted to sell London and was never here.
Yeah.
We've got Charles the First, who was so useless they chopped his head off. We've got James the Second, who got driven into exile. And George the Fourth, who was just a basic,
sausage.
Fat sausage.
Yeah.
They're all hopeless.
Yeah.
But in a way, I kind of like that. And then opposite, we've got George the Fifth.
Stamp collecting.
Stamp collecting.
Led the world in stamp collecting.
Yeah.
But led Britain through the First World War. You know, jolly good king, generally, I would say.
And called the current Queen Lilibet, thereby inspiring the name of Harry and Meghan's.
Oh, it's so nice
daughter.
That they brought it back to Meghan. It's what she would want, isn't it?
So there's a link, yeah. So it all connects. It all joins up. So we began with Charles I and we've ended with Princess Meghan.
Princess Meghan.
One day she'll have a statue here.
Yeah, you think?
We've solved the whole statue dilemma.
Well, I think, have we not decided they should all stay and we should just build more? Isn't that the...
No, I think we've decided we should keep them all, we should get rid of the lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't recall us coming to that conclusion, but...
Well, I think I said that about the statues in Parliament Square. I was quite in favour of getting rid of the lot.
That was a mad thesis. Anyway, we've had a very jolly walk. It's been very sunny. We've done three episodes. I think we're
also,
the end
you've
of...
changed my mind.
Yes. Now, that does not think... happen often.
I don't think that's ever happened.
Even as we speak, the producers are thinking about ways to animate that, put it on Twitter as a clip. I'm still wearing my Tom Holland baseball cap, which is an achievement.
So in a way, I've been humiliated, but you've been even more humiliated.
That's what I like to think this podcast is all about.
So we've evened out.
Yeah. On that note, to our remaining listener, we say thank you for staying with us. And we will see you next time when we will be back in the studio, or at least our own homes, and talking about something else.
That's not about statues.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All right, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, please sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.